Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
This sacrifice is in remembrance of what the Quran says, as well as the Bible, of when Abraham was inspired, or he had a dream that he was to sacrifice one of his sons, and then God told Abraham that he did not have to sacrifice his son, and a ram came, and Abraham then sacrificed the ram.
That's Dawid Walid of the Council on American Islamic Relations talking about a Muslim festival that began yesterday in many parts of the world and in North America today, Eid al-Adha. We're going to be talking about that Muslim festival, what it remembers, with Dr. Adam Francisco in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, November the 17th. We'll begin talking with Dr. Adam Francisco about Eid al-Adha, and then we'll continue our series on apparent contradictions in the Bible, talking to Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis about marriage of siblings and, a little later in the Old Testament, does God actually sanction adultery? It's Wednesday afternoon. We are coming to you live, and you can join us as well. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page. We've left a place there for your questions and comments on the apparent contradictions of the Bible regarding the marriage of siblings and does God sanction adultery, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Adam Francisco is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, California, and author of the book Martin Luther and Islam. Dr. Francisco, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good afternoon.
In the Christian calendar, there are all sorts of holidays and festivals generally surrounding and revolving around the life of Christ, the deeds of Christ, or of his church. In Islam, when they celebrate a festival or a holiday, what are they generally, who are they generally commemorating there?
All sorts of figures from the Quran. The Festival of Eid is kind of a remembrance of an occasion around the so-called Islamic prophet Ibrahim, or Abraham, and his dream that he had, that he was to sacrifice one of his sons. The Islamic tradition says it's Ishmael. And in a way, because this festival is connected with the Hajj, which is one of the five pillars of Islam, this is a duty. It's compulsory, if Muslims are able to afford it, to take part. And part of their system of working out your righteousness. So it's kind of, you might say, subjective, whereas, you know, in Christian holidays are more about the objective reality of our salvation won for us by Jesus. In Islam, holidays are more about participating so that you might work up or gain more or earn more merit for your case for salvation at the last day.
You mentioned this, that the Quran's reading of what would probably correspond to Genesis 22 in the Old Testament, usually called the binding of Isaac or the testing of Abraham, reads significantly different in the Quran. What are the differences again?
Well, the big difference is that the Quran mentions that Abraham, it talks about Abraham having a dream that he's to sacrifice his son. Now, the name of the son is not given in the Quran. It's kind, in the Quran, it's a very short episode and very ambiguous. So it mirrors the account in Genesis. Where things get really different is the way Muslims interpret it. And they usually, historically, have said that it was Ishmael who was to be sacrificed, but in his place a ram was given. There's all sorts of reasons why they probably interpret it this way. Most notably is to identify the lineage of Abraham through Ishmael and then to the descendant of Ishmael, the Arabs, and later on the Muslims.
Okay, so there's a difference in the narrative. Is there a difference in what they think the sacrifice narrative is all about? In Christian theology, it is described in the latter part of the New Testament as a test of Abraham, and that it is by faith in Christ, ultimately, that he does what he does in that test, and that it is also treated as a foreshadowing of the ultimate sacrifice of Christ, God sacrificing his own son at the cross for the salvation of the world. What did they do with the story?
For them, sacrifice is just something you do. It's the Quran talks about in chapter 2, or defines what a good, righteous Muslim does. You know, they fight in jihad, they worship God, they perform the prescribed prayers, and they go on the Hajj or the pilgrimage, and at the end they give a sacrifice, almost like a thank offering, perhaps, or perhaps just a ritual they perform. It has no, it does not point to any greater sacrifice, certainly, and in fact, Islamic theology rejects any concept of an atonement. So it doesn't really have a prophetic theme at all. It's simply a ceremony to bring about remembrance of what God had, or Allah had accomplished in the past, or what Allah had performed in the past.
So do they actually perform a blood sacrifice, Muslims, on this day?
Yes. It's different. You know, there are all sorts of regional variations, but ideally, a Muslim family that has domesticated animals will pick the best of those animals, whether it's a cow or a goat or a sheep or something, and go through various rituals in sacrificing this animal. Usually, the way I've seen it, not personally, but in documentaries and things, is, and in literature, is that the animal will face the animal towards Mecca and usually slit its throat, and then after the animal is slaughtered, then sometimes it's cooked, other times it's not, and it's divided up into three different portions. The one portion goes to the family itself, the second portion goes to the greater family, and then the third is given to some sort of Islamic charity to be dished out to the poor, those people who just simply could not, for whatever reason, perform the sacrifice.
And you said that this comes in conjunction in the calendar with the Hajj, which is, as you said, one of the five pillars of Islam, the pilgrimage. What is that?
It's a duty that every Muslim has to perform, so long as they can afford it and they have the physical means to do so, where they, at least once in their life, are to make a pilgrimage to Mecca and perform various rites and ceremonies in Mecca in commemoration of Muhammad's pilgrimage. And following that, when they return home, or some people stick around in Saudi Arabia and perform this or wait for this festival then. So it's all integrally linked. And so in that sense, this festival is largely regarded as a duty that's part and parcel of the Hajj. And if you don't perform the Hajj and the things that go along with it, including this festival, if there's no good reason for why you can't perform it, then you are seen by the community as not a faithful or a devout Muslim, perhaps a hypocrite Muslim.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but since sacrifice is kind of the moral obligation of the Muslim that goes beyond any specific sacrifice, animal sacrifice, they may be required to perform. In what kind of theological framework does this take place? What is all this obedience, observance? What is this ultimately getting the individual Muslim?
Yeah, it's emblematic of the nature of Islam. Islam is not, contrary to what a lot of people say, a religion that is shaped by this concept of peace, but rather the concept of submission to Allah, and therefore not just a kind of ambiguous submission to Allah, but a submission to every aspect of your life to Allah, and everything that he has decreed through the mouthpiece of Muhammad contained in the Quran and also the traditions of Islam. The best Muslim is the one who will pay attention to the details of the Quran and perform everything and do everything that the Quran enjoins a Muslim to do. And so it, Islam is the religion, as Luther would put it, the religion of submission par excellence and the religion of works righteousness par excellence.
So this is not about trusting Allah. This is not about having faith in Allah to be merciful or to save. This is simply doing what Allah says.
Right. They will use the terms. They will talk about the mercy of Allah, but they mean something entirely different by it than we do in Christianity. It's really the onus of your salvation is upon you and what you do. And even then, you can't be certain.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, is it true that even the most devout Muslim, that is in his observance of all the traditions of Islam, as you said, not only can't be certain, but believes that Allah is ultimately arbitrary, and that at the end, regardless of his life, Allah may, out of pure sovereignty, maybe even caprice, damn him?
Absolutely. Unless you die in jihad, your salvation or eternal security is not, you just simply cannot know it. They wouldn't use the term, not that you're suggesting they would, but they wouldn't use the term arbitrary, but it's all the eternal destiny of man is something Allah has already decided, even before you're born, many will say. So it's not even really worth fretting over. You will end up where Allah has decreed you to end up.
Dr. Adam Francisco is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, California. He's author of the book Martin Luther and Islam. We'll have a link to that book under the Listen On Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Francisco, thank you again.
You're welcome.
When we come back, Dr. David Adams joins us. We're going to deal with some apparent contradictions in the Bible. Brothers marrying sisters, God sanctioning adultery, and the like.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.